Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey Podcast. By the faithful and for the faithful, I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David, how are you today?
You know.
Is today a day for the funeral piano music?
Not today. We seem to be heading in that direction, though.
Requiem on a lost season.
Oh, what a bummer, eh? The whole thing's just a bummer.
The whole thing is a bummer.
Yeah, to be in the same spot again, one of these horrible press conferences. And so, yeah, the big question right now for Oilers fans is who's going to stick around? Is Shirelli going to stick around? Is McClellan going to stick around? Or the assistants going to stick around? Or all of them gone? Or some of them gone? And it was Peter Shirelli's turn today to face the music, to have his press conference. And it was, I thought, kind of a meaty press conference in a lot of ways, although he couldn't get to the heart of the matter because it doesn't sound like decisions have been made. They're still in the evaluation process. Yeah. But Bruce, he did make it clear, as strong as a hint that can be made, that there are changes coming. He himself said he's evaluating the coaches. And he said, essentially, after the year that they had, yes, there's going to be a change. Something's going to change.
I have an exact quote here, and I think it's worth repeating because I think this was the meatiest part of the press conference anyway, where he says that he was asked about who was evaluating the coaches after first saying they were all being evaluated, including himself. He said, "I'm doing the evaluation of the coaches. After this season, they're under close scrutinization. I have to look real close at it. I have to dig deep. I can't say with certainty, but on the surface, you'd think, yes, I have to make some changes." So that's how he worded it. I can't say with certainty, but on the surface, you'd think, yes, I have to make some changes. So my first takeaway was I have to make some changes. And then when I went back, and that's what I put in the headline. And then I went back and I sort of thought I'll transcribe some of these comments more specifically rather than paraphrasing. And sure enough, there's wiggle room in there. But such is the nature of Shirelli speak that there's usually wiggle room.
Not a lot of wiggle room, Bruce. I mean, some.
Yeah, no, I think it says what he's going to say, but he just hasn't. It's not in a non-committal way. He's saying, yeah, we got to change something.
So I initially was taking it as just maybe the assistant coach is going, but the more I re-listened to the interview and the more I listened to it, the more I think that McClellan may be going. And I'll give you a couple examples. So he talked about this top-down evaluation of him and all the coaches. And then his quote is, "I think Todd is a very good coach, but we're in a period of evaluation right now with him and his staff. I'm in a period of evaluation right now." Then he goes on to say, mm-hmm. he saw some progress with the coaches, some promising signs. They were able to work through things. But I guess the major takeaway on the coaches is that we're all under evaluation. So, I mean, that could just be the truth, but it's also, you know, it's what do they say? Forget everything said before the word but and just listen to that, what comes after it. Mm-hmm. And what came after it, when coupled with everything else in that, what he had to say, because there was, if you were Todd McClellan listening to that interview, don't you think your ears would be burning a little bit? Like with the talk of lack of execution, lack of commitment, lack of people bringing their lunch buckets, lack of cutting out the noise, subpar performances. Now you could say, well, that's all on the players. But anyone who knows hockey knows that's not all on the players. These are primary functions of the coach to make sure that the team is doing all those things. That's the coach's job. I mean, as much as anyone, that's his direct job are all of those things, execution, raising players up. You know, he talked about Jesse Puljujärvi losing confidence as the year went on. To me, Bruce, it's maybe I'm wrong. But I just took that as, you know, he was singling out the players and putting his finger at the players. But if you're the coach and you're listening to that, you after 3 years with that group, mm-hmm. you're putting that all on the players. No, that isn't how it works, I don't believe.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he also talked about their pressure on the forecheck, their play in the neutral zone, their support of the puck on the breakout. Like he basically went all through the all three zones with the criticism.
You just got the sense he was watching the games and seeing constant flaws, which he probably was. It is a game of mistakes and flaws, but it just, you know, he's looking at things and he sounds like he saw personnel issues on both the power play and the PK. Mm-hmm. And that's something that certainly came up on this podcast a lot through the years, were the personnel issues on those. And again, who puts those players on the ice? That's the players don't. They don't decide. That's the coach. So anyway, I took it as initially I was thinking that McClellan's probably safe after his press conference, but I'm starting to wonder about that. Having heard that interview, it sounds like Shirelli's doing a lot of soul searching about how far he has to go here, and it's sure a difficult decision.
Yeah, well, how could it not be? With any coach, but certainly one that with the history and the respect that came in with the fanfare and the salary, you know, that still exists. I mean, it's the league's second highest paid coach, I understand. So when you make a decision like that, you're going to get the owner's attention. So you better get it right. But yeah, there was a few things sort of scattered in about. Here's one: we're not going to dismantle this team. We have some areas we've got to fill and areas off the ice we've got to look at.
Yeah, there we go again. That was another exact. So he's always referencing it, constantly referencing it. And I mean, this is the process they're going through. I mean, he admitted that they were not like reading in that. They are going through this process. It's just where are we going to end up here? So Bruce, the Cult of Hockey readers have made up their minds, generally speaking, mm-hmm. and quite decisively on where they think the Oilers should end up when this process is done. What are they saying about Shirelli himself?
Well, so far with the poll we just posted this afternoon, we're already up over 1,400 votes. And it's a simple yes, no. Should Peter Shirelli return as Edmonton Oilers GM next season? And so far, the no's have it by 77% to 23. So resounding no, he shouldn't return. People were not impressed by his team or apparently by his performance in today's press conference.
I think we did. Did we do an earlier poll? And it was kind of like that too, wasn't it? I think the numbers have increased for letting him go.
Yeah, there was a poll, I think, during the season. I can't remember the exact specifics.
I remember something similar.
Yeah,
he has obviously lost the majority. I think this indicates to me, and from what I'm reading on Twitter, where it's even more vitriolic, mm-hmm. He has lost, you know, in terms of the tier two fans on the internet, he's lost that group of fans. I don't know about the people who buy season tickets or not, but.
Well, 77% would suggest that he's lost a lot of fans because, I think the readers that we get are
wide spectrum.
Spectrum, yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. So he was asked a couple times in the press conference about his work. And he seemed to, you know, he talked about the young wingers maybe not stepping up. And he indicated they got rid of a lot of veteran players. So they got rid of, you know, over the Pouliot and Eberle from last year. Mm-hmm. Who else did they lose from last year? Which other veterans?
Hendricks.
Hendricks.
And they also, and DeHarnay, I guess. And also
Lander.
And then, of course, this year they moved on from Letestu and Maroon during the season.
Yeah, so he was saying, and his take on that was, he says they didn't bring back the veterans, and he says that was born out of necessity. Mm-hmm. So now, it struck me, you can take that as he meant the cap, the salary cap, like it's a necessity when you need room under the cap. Of course, that doesn't stand up so well when you had all this, you know, cap space. Mm-hmm. Is it $10 million of cap space? It didn't get used this year.
Yeah, by the time they haven't calculated in bonuses yet, so that's going to come down, but there's still going to be probably $3 or $4 million they didn't use. And So the business of not replacing veteran players with more expensive veterans, but only, you know, letting young guys step up, there was not that imperative from a salary cap perspective. There was not the imperative to buy out Benoit Pouliot this year as opposed to next year from a salary cap perspective. There was not the imperative to trade Jordan Eberle this year as opposed to next year from a salary cap perspective. So I'm not sure that argument entirely holds water. I think he was talking about the necessity perhaps of individual situations that just had to be dealt with.
Maybe there, well, that's the other obvious thing. Like the coach, I think had it with Eberle.
And Pouliot.
So I think that's the other necessity at work here. And Eberle, a huge faction of fans, it become toxic in Edmonton for Jordan Eberle as a player. Those are the other necessities. So he says, could we have done better in placing those players? Maybe. Did we overproject on a couple of young guys? Maybe early on we did. So yeah. That's the, in terms of him taking responsibility, saying, you know, maybe they didn't make good enough trades and maybe they didn't move early enough or maybe they expected too much. Certainly with Yamamoto, that was the case. Maybe with he was also indicating Benning and Nurse were in the same camp in terms of replacing Sekera. Mm-hmm. And it's true. The level of performance that Andre Sekera gave on the top pairing last year or 2016-17 as compared to the level of performance that Darnell Nurse provided, it was like a world of difference. Sekera got the job done and Nurse struggled. He was barely mediocre in a very difficult role. He barely hung on. And which is not bad for a young defenseman, but it's not what Andre Sekera brought the year before when he really, when he did a fine job in a tough role. So,
yeah, well, I personally think that the difference in the health of the starting goalie and the three core defensemen from last season to this was just a huge factor. I'm not sure there's a whole lot that the GM or the coach could have done to prevent a major fallback this year. Just based on Klefbom was hurt all year, Sekera was out for half the year and playing hurt the other half. Larson had his issues and then he had other issues, you know, and he missed time with injury. Talbot missed time with injury. There was rumor he was hurt beforehand, playing hurt beforehand. And Bob Stauffer was talking today that he was maybe dinged up the entire rest of the way. And all of those guys were absolutely crucial to Edmonton's turnaround in 2016-17 in a good way. And the collective, you know, drop of their health and performance just was a huge impact.
Now, of course, Chiarelli did take some did make one big move to alleviate Sekera's injury, and that's he brought back Chris Russell. Mm-hmm. Like they could have let Chris Russell go. They could have traded for a right shot D-man. I mean, Calgary traded their first pick this year and they got Travis mm-hmm. Hamonic. And I don't know maybe if what Chiarelli's biggest critics this year would have said. They certainly don't like the Russell signing. I like Russell as a mm-hmm. player a lot. I'm glad they didn't make that Hamonic trade. It's looking like a total disaster. Oh.
Myself, and I've been thinking this all year, I'd rather have had Chris Russell at zero acquisition cost than give up what Calgary had to give up to bring in Travis Hamonic. Now, the critics will quickly point out that Edmonton gave up similar for Griffin Reinhart, and it didn't work out at all, whereas at least Travis Hamonic is a player, and that's fair.
That is fair.
Chris Russell is also a player, and he, he costs money and he's got a no move clause for one more year. But Chris Russell couldn't replace Andre Sekera. All he could do was continue being Chris Russell. So there's the hole that was, Chiarelli didn't want to lose both guys from the pair. So he brought the one guy back because of the unavailability of the other, but it did not solve the problem.
No, as bad as this year was, if you didn't bring back Chris Russell. Now, that's in defense of Chiarelli. If you wanted to be, I think here's a fair criticism, is that he's talking right now about the need for a puck-moving mm-hmm. right shot or puck-moving top four D-man, essentially, which has been talked about every year for about 5 years since Justin mm-hmm. Schultz didn't pan out and then was traded. So there's been this huge need for that kind of player. A fair criticism of Shirelli is, why didn't you realize that last summer? You know, why didn't, when you looked at this team, how did you miss that? That they, even if you didn't think Sekera was going to come back strong, but Russell could cover the vet, but you had this hole in terms of moving the puck. I guess he thought Nurse and Benning were going to step up and move the puck well enough this year to, and you know what, after seeing Benning in the Anaheim series, remember played 23 or 24 minutes in one of the final games, he looked really good. Maybe that wasn't such a rash thing to think, but it certainly didn't work. And if there's a, I think a fair criticism, there's a couple. I think he really failed to bring in an adequate backup goalie, both last year and this year. And that's contributed to Cam Talbot's health problems. And I think that this right shot D-man thing, like, it was pretty clear, and it's been clear for a while, that would have really helped the Oilers. And he has failed to date to get that player. And it's a big part of the reason things didn't go well this year was the lack of puck moving savvy on that blue line.
Yeah, well, he did get Adam Larson, obviously, at a huge cost. And he also got Matt Benning at no cost. But neither of them, I think, is that player that you're talking about.
That's right.
I mean, the player that you really want is not easily gotten. I think Kurt's going to write about that in some more detail tonight about that market. But we've got really the closest thing that the Oilers have had to the player that they need is Justin Schultz. Just the way that turned out was just tragic.
Yeah. And again, here's another player with all kinds of talent, and they got so toxic for him in Edmonton. So many fans had turned against him. And many of these are the same of fans who are Charlie's biggest critics. You know, he couldn't stay here. He was shot. He was through. It was so ugly here for him. So I think people should think about that. Of course they won't. So any other major takeaways, Bruce?
Well, I think the comment on the Nuge, that's to me, that's a positive thing. It sounds like he really did say, I think we glanced on this earlier and I meant to go back to it, but he said that absolutely, let me find it exactly. He was asked if he would definitively say if his intention was to bring back RNH as part of the core group. And he said, yeah, I would say that. So he didn't say the words other than he responded specifically to a well-defined question. So,
well, we don't know in terms of Shirelli.
But he hasn't committed to him as a center or winger yet, he said.
Well, that makes sense. It's up to the coach on a certain level to do that, right? Like, it's not really the GM's call. He might hire a coach. But I think this might get to, like, one of the questions that wasn't asked, if there wasn't a question that wasn't asked, was there a major difference in philosophy, or what were the major differences in philosophy between the coaching staff this year, if any? Mm-hmm. And one of the things, because we know that Shirelli has often went into the year talking about Draisaitl as a center and having this 1-2 punch on the team. And it's, I think, something that he's talked about a lot more than the coach. And the coach, of course, immediately went to McDavid and Draisaitl. And maybe Shirelli all year long wanted to see RNH with McDavid earlier on. And finally got his way when the season was essentially over. When the season was over, and so we don't know that. And I would have. That's one area. Maybe he wouldn't have talked about that at this point. But that's one thing I'm curious about. Is just I just didn't get the sense of a GM thrilled with his coach or his coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean, all the disconnect on Draisaitl as a center. I mean, all the talk around the contract was Draisaitl being a center.
Yes.
And that contract being made much more expensive and difficult because of the way Draisaitl had been used the previous year. And that contract year, I was thinking, geez, I wonder if I was the GM, I probably wouldn't be too happy to be seeing Leon on Connor's wing all the time. And of course, that came back to bite. And then the commentary was, yeah, well, Leon's going to be a center. And then this year took a long time for that really to work its way into reality. So there was that to me, that's sort of the number one red flag in terms of the GM and coach being on the same page, but it's not the only one.
Yeah. And again, there were some comments about there was an interesting comment about the players, Bruce, and I'll read it in pretty much full here. Quote, "There was a lot of common comments in our exit meetings from the players about the lack of commitment on the ice. Maybe that's a nicer way of saying cheating. That's a very broad comment and it can apply to a lot of areas on the ice, but the players openly said that. They're saying that they have to be better at committing to the system, whether it's our D-zone coverage, which I had issues with this year. It's the right system, it's the wrong execution. The overall commitment has to be better, and they're the first ones to admit it." So, man, there's a number of ways you can read that comment too, because you can see that. Is he blaming the players there, or is he saying actually the players got it right and we also had the right system, but the players need to obviously commit more. But again, that can go back on the coach. Who's in charge of the execution of the system? The players are, and the coach is. Right. Who's in charge of the commitment level? The players are, the coaches are. Who's telling the GM that it wasn't right? Well, the players, it sounds like they're kind of conspiring against the coach on a certain level. Like, yeah, we need to commit more, and it's telling the GM that. And I guess they're pointing the fingers at themselves, but they could also be blaming the coach.
Well, they could also be blaming each other as opposed to themselves. I mean, you don't have the context in an exit interview. The player says, yeah, we need to play more committed hockey.
Pointing the finger at other players. That's probably the best explanation. I probably have it completely wrong here, and you've nailed it here.
And so some finger pointing, and for all we know, they're all complaining about the same teammate. You know, I mean, that's one of the things that sometimes and you got, we need to show more, you know, whatever. And there's, you know, I don't want to speculate a name or anything. I'm just saying that it can be that extreme, that one guy out of line and the teammates all make similar comments. So what they said in the exit interview and how it was parsed by Shirelli and how it came out and how it's subsequently parsed by us, I mean, obviously we're a few degrees removed. But
the only time I saw cheating from various players at various times, and every single player, right? I'm not like everyone. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a couple like Chris Russell. Does he ever cheat? I mean, because it's just that, like, that's kind of anathema to his nature as a human being.
He made a bad line change one time. that to me is a
that form of cheating.
Commitment error sometimes.
I think of Drysdale on the penalty kill. First thing that comes to mind a little bit when I think of that, like he likes to get those rushes on the penalty kill, and he's looking for offense on the penalty kill sometimes rather than make the safe play, he'll try to pass it out or carry it out. And that burnt them a few times, but this is the sense I get of just the coach sitting there and watching the team play and really, really not liking what he's seeing. So where this ends up is.
Yeah, well, yeah, he pointed, and I think you like, I first thought that he was really dumping on the players. But I think you're right that so many of the comments are sort of veiled, sort of double entendres, I guess, that, you know, some of what the players produce is the responsibility of the coaches. He made a remark, Shirelli also made a remark about the number of line changes and how.
Line combinations.
And maybe he didn't like the blender either. And then, of course, he'd always sort of demur a little bit and say it could just be because of the choices that he had available. So he kept sort of making these oblique references to his own role in it. But
here's the quote, Bruce. He says, yeah. "I think a number of line combinations, and this isn't throwing it on the coaches, but the number of line combination, a function of us not doing well, has something to do with the winger's underperformance." Mm-hmm. So he immediately saw how that looked, that he was, you know, the number of line combinations. Well, that's the one obvious thing that a coach changes.
Yep.
But a function of us not doing well. What comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah, well, you're losing, so you switch up the lines, and then the lines get worse. That's my takeaway from that sequence.
Or you have the wrong lines in the first place because you're playing Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid on the same line, and you're leaving these wingers without a function, like a, the, you know, the top functioning center they need to be with. And so then you got to change it up and you're constantly changing. But I don't know. I'm in the minority, Bruce, of fans. Like I'm not sure about what to do about the coach, but I would keep Shirelli. And that puts me in the 23%. I'm a 23%er here. So I think that the team he put together this year was widely regarded at the start of the year as a team that should at least make the playoffs and do well and probably do really well. And hardly anyone looking at the team at that time and everything about this team, hardly anyone disagreed with that. So that's Shirelli's work. That's the team he put together. That was the evaluation of almost everybody, almost every Oiler fan, and almost every hockey observer. He's the, you know, this team that has been put together, and the GM's part of that, obviously, this should challenge for the playoffs.
And those darn 94s went and crapped the bed, though.
Because the coach didn't get them to execute. Yeah, so who are the 94? So that's my take, is that the team was, and yeah, like, come on, he's made, you know, the trade, you know, the Larson trade has looked bad this year. I continue to defend the trade. I'm again in a small percentage of people who probably do that now, because the trade was a win for the Oilers last year, clearly a loss, you know, for the Oilers this year in comparison, certainly in comparison to Hall. He had a great year in New Jersey. We'll see what happens next year. Adam Larson is a very good hockey player. He's a very good defenseman, and he's a top four right shot defenseman, can play in the top pairing with the right guy. I think that's a very valuable piece. So, you know, most people's hatred of Shirelli is based on that trade. It's related to that.
That's one of the trades.
It's one of them, you know, and I get the Reinhardt trade. Who's defending that? I just,
well, there's no defense, but in retrospect, and the smartest kids in the room were, dumping on it right from the beginning, and it turned out they were right.
Yeah. I mean, but the, you know, the Eberle trade, I was kind of 50-50 on.
Still kind of 40-60 on that trade. I don't hate.
Oh, I like Strome a bit more than I thought I was. Yeah, I like him. I thought I was going to like him, and I did like him in the end.
What they did, what didn't happen there, and this was a question that didn't get asked, was why didn't you use your cap space? Because they had $3.5 million to play with just from that trade alone. To add I've been saying all year, Thomas Vanek, or, you know, a guy that's going to score you 20 goals and 50 points. There's, you know, there's guys out there available. And yet the guys Edmonton had that filled for Eberle on the wing, you know, thinking of Strome as a center, you got one veteran, Mike Camilleri, 22 points. Dujar Kara, mostly a wing, 21 points. Drake Caggiula, 20 points. Jesse Puljujärvi, 20 points. Zach Kassian, 19 points. And then you go down to Slepyshev at 12 points.
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the guys there. He was one of the 94s. All those 94s, Bruce. Mm-hmm. All those 94s.
And so they just didn't have that second line, even third. I mean, to me, 20 points on the wing, that's almost fourth line production. And that's what they were all getting.
Well, I wonder how Anton Slepyshev does if instead of having, you know, a steady Dujar Kara or Mark Letestu or Ryan Strome as his center, if he had had Leon Draisaitl as his center for 40 games and from the start of the year.
No telling, and I'm not sure we're going to find out. I'm hearing tell that he may be on his way out. He's got options, of course. So,
well, yeah, 12 points.
Yeah, no, I know. But we didn't, you know.
I don't mind the player, but
he never really got a solid run, and maybe that was just his own doing. He didn't earn the trust of the coach or what have you.
It's just, I don't know. It's just weird that line did so. Like, how do you earn the trust of the coach? You earn it in the playoffs by playing well. He gets on a line in the playoffs with Draisaitl and Lucic. That line kicks butt in at least one or two games, like really important playoff games. And you think this, like, okay. We're going to see this line for sure, because that's how you would earn the coach's trust. And it was like, what, 50 games into the season, Bruce? 55 games?
Yeah, about two-thirds of the way into the season, I looked it up on Natural Stat Trick, and they played something like 18 seconds together. So it was just bizarre.
I don't know. So anyway, I'm you know, if they bring McClellan back, I think clearly they're going to replace some assistant coaches. I think that's, they need to do that. That's a, probably a really healthy process. Get some new information, some new eyes on the process. And if they bring McClellan back under those circumstances, I can, you know, I'm okay with that, because I think, well, if the team doesn't turn it around, you can bring in a new coach in November, like end of November, and the season isn't necessarily lost at that point. So I don't think by giving McClellan another chance, you're dooming the team next year. That said, if he's let go, that's especially if there's a really good replacement coach, I think that's a solid move too. Mm-hmm. What's your take?
My take is that Connor McDavid isn't going to be sick in the first half next year. I hope he isn't. And I hope that he can play 82 games again and dominate enough of them to ensure they're at least going to be in the hunt.
It's pretty dominant this year.
I know, and they lost a lot of those games, like down the stretch. Remember, there was one of the 10-game segments that I looked at where the Oilers went, was it 3-6-1 or something? And in the four games where they scored points, McDavid had 10 goals. And they lost all the other games in regulation.
So what do you think is going to happen, Bruce? That wasn't a real...
That's the thing we can count on, is we got this absolute stud of a player.
Yes. In terms of prediction, now that's the safest.
Yeah, and now we've...
I'll go out on a limb here.
Build around that guy. I think that'd be a real good idea, don't you? I mean, this is the astonishing part, was it's a team sucking in the context of having that player.
It totally is. And not having those puck moving D again, I think that's one of the things I think is really held against Shirelli. And again, if Shirelli gets fired, I'm not going to be like saying, oh, that's a terrible mistake. I don't think it would be. Mm-hmm. I think it would be better on the whole, you know, to keep him, because I think he's there is that thing about learning a lot from making mistakes, and people do learn from making mistakes. I don't think he's a dumb man. I think he's a smart man. And I think he's shown some ability to build a hockey team. So.
Well, some say he's making the same mistakes in Edmonton that he made with Boston in terms of on the contract front. Now, one thing I did hear today that was interesting, he kind of went off on a tangent and talked about building the team through the age groups. And he talked about having a churn of players, that, you know, the young star players coming up, making that next step, and you know, in the 94s moving forward and having players at different age and experience levels. And he's talking my language when he says that. I always looked at the teams in that sort of balance them across the experience spectrum, and the Oilers always used to have big holes in the middle. And at first he addressed that really firmly, brought in, you know, a lot of these 26, 27, 28 year olds, and it worked last year, but then this year, I'm not sure he completely followed his own template in terms of letting some of those vets get away and not replacing enough of them with other vets.
Okay, so in a nutshell, what do you think should be done with the coach and the GM and the coaching staff?
Oh boy. I wouldn't have been surprised if today's conference hadn't been Shirelli's, but it had been someone else's saying he's done.
Okay. And how would you have been with that?
Well, I have to admit, I'm becoming more and more of a fatalist.
Okay.
As older I get, and this applies in other aspects of life as well, it's more, well, whatever's going to happen, let's just follow along and see where it goes. And so it's part of being an observer more than a participant, right? We're outsiders here. I'd like to try and think along with the people that are setting up the rosters. To me, that's one of the funnest things to follow as a fan, is how are they making the team? And last summer, truly, I think lost the plot. He has to do way, way better at signing depth players. The guys he brought in to help, provide depth, the guys he said that weren't sexy, but he thought they'd be really valuable to us. Well, they weren't sexy. And they weren't very valuable to even Bakersfield, let alone Edmonton.
So you think he did well up until last summer, essentially?
Well, obviously, I mean, you can hold out those big trades as a huge red card. I liked some of his philosophy, and in retrospect, some of his philosophy, like he did fill some what have historically been weaknesses in the Oilers. But this idea that the game has changed from heavy to fast, and while he was taking the Oilers the wrong way, there's some traction to that argument.
There is a ton of it, Bruce. And one of the things I did probably a word search for the word heavy, mm-hmm. you wouldn't have found it, I don't think, in today's pod press conference. And you would have found it a lot in his first. And if you had searched for the word pace, mm-hmm. you would have found it a lot. This press conference and not at all in the first, I don't believe. Maybe a bit. He might have talked about it a bit. But yeah, this is a major failing of the GM. And on one level, on another level, when he came in here, we're facing having to get through Los Angeles and Anaheim in the playoffs, the Oilers were. And the way to do that seemed obvious. But I think that the mistake that Chiarelli made and that many observers made from the Anaheim series last year was all the focus on Anaheim's toughness and not enough focus on Anaheim's unbelievably mobile and skilled defense.
Yeah, you've made that point before, and it's a real good one.
And it's something that I missed, and I wasn't talking about it. I didn't hear anyone talking about it, honestly. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's someone saying, you know, the Oilers, like we were all talking about, the Oilers need puck moving D. They need their right shot D, but no one's saying like, this is the lesson of the Anaheim. This is the fundamental lesson. This is a fundamental thing we need to do.
Everyone's thinking, yeah, we need a tough game. Say hi. Yeah.
Yeah. And Fowler and they had Vatanen at the time. They've traded him since,
also,
they've got all kinds of guys who can move that puck. So I think that's the lesson. I mean, it's good that he's taken that lesson. It's good he's still not talking about, grit intensity as the main issue. Mm-hmm. This is why I'm open to him staying. I think he is learning the hard way. And now, is he the guy? And then, if he goes, I'm not going to weep about it. If he stays, I'll be okay with it. Coach, I'll be more happy if he goes because I am worried about the development of some of these younger players, the 94s, Puljujärvi, about the issues that came up with the line combinations, sticking with veteran players way too much. I think we have a coach who loves his veterans. And that's on this team, I don't think that's the way to go in the end. So that's why I'd be happy with a change.
Yeah, well, Talbot and Lucic has a couple of examples that where he just kept going back to the well with the guy, regardless of how his play was going. Again, you might say
Letestu, Sekera. We saw those guys even when they weren't performing this year all year long. I mean, you got to play them, but you can limit how much you use them. And in the end, he did that right when it was beaten in that. This was a losing strategy, but wow, it took a while. All right, Bruce. Okay, let's go to the secret good thing. Let's end this up. We've been going on here for quite a while. Any secret good thing that you can think of out of that press conference?
Secret good thing.
I have one.
Go first, then.
I mean, it's not surprising that he's a big Jesse Puljujärvi booster. And sticking with that player, but he gave a really sound evaluation of exactly what happened. Like he had a very clear-eyed evaluation of Puljujärvi's strength, weaknesses, his season, what went right, what went wrong, but has kind of an enduring confidence and faith in the player and support of the player. And I really like that because I'm a big Puljujärvi fan and I have the same hopes for him. So that's what I liked.
Well, yeah, I like it on the meta sense that he's able to evaluate a player in sort of
accurately.
Yeah, and aloof enough that, you know, he's not just saying, oh, he's great, he's going to be fantastic, we love everything about the guy, but actually saying this is what went right, this is what went wrong. Overall, we think we did, we wouldn't change how we developed because he's good enough to develop at this level, even though he's got more developing to do. And I didn't mind those comments. Secret good thing. Oh boy. Well, I didn't mind his Ty Ratty comments. And he mentioned that, you know, when he was in Bakersfield, he was very much a one-dimensional player, which is why he stayed down there for most of the
time. Which is what I saw too.
And then when he came back, you know, bringing him up late after the trade deadline, which some had foreseen earlier in the year. And he had, compared to those other wingers I named earlier, his production was good. Of course, he spent all of his time with McDavid, so that's going to move the needle quite a lot. But at least they're, you know, this, we'd like to have him back. We're having some discussions. Like, to me, that's a no-brainer from both sides that he'd be a decent depth player. I wouldn't sort of sign him and say, well, now we've got first line right wing looked after. Don't put it that way, but have him in the mix as a tweener and a guy that might be ready to make the next step after, you know, a few years as a pro.
Oh man, if they can sign him and he can, let's say he could get, let's say what we saw wasn't a mirage, Bruce, mm-hmm. and that he would be capable of getting, let's say, 50 points mm-hmm. playing with McDavid next year. Mm-hmm. What a benefit that would be to have Yamamoto and in the minors and Benson, you know, have them have their development not rushed mm-hmm. and proceed sharply, because you actually have this veteran who then you can move aside probably. And if these guys are ready, so that would be huge. Hey Bruce, I want to address one other thing, because in his last press conference, Todd McLellan talked about, he thanked the media and like he talked about how much he liked to see them. And then he also referenced these, you know, experts who are critical of the team mm-hmm. and how he'd like to see them face to face.
And what I was thinking,
what's that?
Were your ears burning when he said that?
Well, a little bit, I thought. That's interesting. But it also was confusing, because the owner's policy has always been they don't accredit fan bloggers. Mm-hmm. And that's what we are. Yeah. We're in that category. Absolutely. We work for the Edmonton Journal, and we have to meet all the standards of fairness and accuracy and professionalism of anyone who works at the Journal in terms of their commentary. And I think we do that. But we are fans and we are bloggers. Fundamentally, we're in that category, and they don't accredit fans and bloggers. So he sounds like he was,
and they haven't
criticizing
ever.
That group for not showing up, but we can't. Mm-hmm. So I needed to clarify that. I wanted to find out what the deal is, you know, in light of McLellan's comments. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to the Oilers, and they provided the answer. No, the policy is just what you thought it is. Fan bloggers and bloggers are not accredited. So we don't have that opportunity to go down there, excuse me, and ask questions, or to go to the games, ask questions afterwards. And that's their policy. The Oilers say that's the way it is for, I think, every NHL team in Canada. And I can see, the plus and the minus of that. We won't get into that right now, but I just wanted to say that's what the policy is. That's why I'm not down there at that press conference.
That's why
today.
You're not asking about the disconnect between.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind having a question or two. I'm up for that, but that's not how the Oilers want to conduct their business. So there you have it, and we'll
leave
it.
That's why the Journal has people like Jim Matheson is down there able to ask questions, and has other people.
And Rob Tichkowski for Post Media. Yeah, we're well represented. Terry Jones is there. The company I work for is well represented there. You know, other blogs aren't, right? You know, I'm a fan blogger. We're attached to a publication that has these people doing this work, but many don't. And so, that's
how pressers, I mean, we can sit in our rear ends in our offices and watch the press conferences. If we were in the room, you know, other than there's no chance to ask questions, but it's even the outsiders have an unprecedented amount of access compared to what used to be the case.
You can listen to everything McLellan says all year long pretty much do so.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Thanks, Bruce, for talking.
And, you know, yeah, one thing, McLellan and the popularity in the poll, is that's one of the things we actually do listen to McLellan talk all year.
Yes. He's
fundamentally a decent person. Shirelli just comes on once on a blue moon, and he's kind of a cold-blooded fish, you know. And I mean, he's smart, and he's got his ideas, but he doesn't come across as overly warm. And I think that's probably going to filter down into things like fan polls. Do you like the guy or not? Sometimes that's sort of the very fundamental level.
I completely, completely agree. I think that's a huge thing that we all see McClellan. We respect him. I mean, he just got back being a fantastic representative for the city, exactly, for the Oilers organization in Saskatchewan. How we feel are kind of our gut visceral take. Because honestly, those poll numbers surprise me. Maybe they shouldn't, but they do surprise me after this season. You know, this team got, 78 points? They were way out of the playoffs, and people are still, after 3 years, still supporting the coach to that level. Mm-hmm. Wow. To me, that's a wow. So maybe we're loyal folk here in Edmonton, but I'm disloyal.
One other wow was Charlie's comment that he was happy with the Oilers' level of goal scoring.
That was a bad one.
In the league, and with a head start of the scoring champion, and as I said in my post, I talk about setting the bar low. Our scoring was more than adequate this year, he said.
Yuck.
Hello.
All right. Yeah, that was a bad one.
That was just,
that's why you're not popular.
Also, talking about even strengths, where they were like 11th. And even so, adequate is not exactly a huge high bar, is it, when you've got 108 points out of the gate?
He might have wanted to clarify that. Mm-hmm. All right, Bruce, let's leave it there.
Yeah.
Thanks for talking.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.